I'm John. Thanks to Joan and Jimmy for having me. Having a mediocre poet read with all these good poets here, it's something. This first poem's for Jimmy. It's called Genesis. I love days when the morning sun hits Pittsburgh like Billy Kahn's fist. One hard blow after another, and the old neighborhoods stagger against the ropes and catch a breath. It's beautiful. Between rounds, the trainers, the cut men, I know what they're thinking. Be prepared for a right and a left, a jab about trees and flower beds and hills, dancing all summer until the rains come, and then darkness like black scissors. But not here, because I command this poem, like God, sweating on the first day of creation, a towel around my neck on the canvas, and a whistle holding rivers apart at the point, because I say so. How Tuesday began. A Marine sniper, young and tan with his shirt off, tattoos and a short haircut, is back in the USA and he means business. Reading Dawn's fine print in the front seat of a 71 Lincoln, pulled over on a tree lawn in Cleveland Heights, listening to a Love Supreme and unloading bricks of marijuana far from jungle thorns and the rice-filled Mekong. I suppose his eyesight is fantastic. It's a warm December, and I can see bare tree branches penciled in the sky. There are so many bark stalks. After the snow melts, when the wind blows off Lake Erie, they rub together with the sound of men stropping razors. Already the Marine and his friends have acquired a stolen gun collection spread out on our kitchen table next to a table hockey game. A Remington 700, an M40 A1 bolt-action rifle, a Mauser C96 semi-automatic, and some others. I worry that after heavy drinking, the table hockey will become violent because we are drinking a lot now and smoking a lot and forgetting a lot. This morning, he said to me, there was a section of Vietnam countryside with cold water in high lakes near a Buddhist monastery where his company patrolled a rubber plantation. The smell of sawmill smoke was in the air and candles. He lay down for a minute and slept in the shade with his gun, his helmet, his equipment on a bed of fern shoots, and dreamed of returning home and stealing and selling drugs because, he said, some men have to pay for high lakes and deep water the color of tar and be judged in the sky's gun sight or move many miles beyond. Like the smoothest bullet cutting the greenest grass, like the smoothest skin of a whore, he said. And that's how Tuesday began, Christmas Day, 1973. Floating. All morning I held my reel open with a cork float, the line unraveling in oyster beds and sandbars, disappearing in the mud where herons stood in their wet trousers. The sun came out later. Croakers and spots ran by the jetty as the ocean was in a hurry and pushed everything into the marsh. It was like driving an old car in the mountains of North Carolina, the curvature of the earth on the horizon ahead of us, and trucks and big rigs pushing everything from behind. We could never go fast enough, the car all crazy floating on the tide, like a girl in a cotton dress with the windows down. Pauly's Island. I cast out and my line went slack in the current. A black drum swam towards me with a message that the osprey in the live oak was still asleep, as were the sea oats and crabs, and what was I doing interrupting the morning before coffee and shrimp? I let him go in the running water of his estate. We both wept. A cloud took up half the sky, and it wasn't a symbol for anything. This one's called Croaker Story. I saw a croaker beside a road in Garden City first thing Saturday morning. I pulled over. His fins smelled like turpentine. He looked worn out. He said, thanks for picking me up. The sun rose over the town like a lit cigarette. We drove for a while toward the sound of the ocean. He looked at me. "I've been on a drinking jag," he said. I was thinking, I never heard anyone say that before. I had to put it in a poem. Fishing. This is a South Carolina evening, perfect as usual, but I haven't caught anything. Sunset, blue sky, cool breeze, and there's a lot going on underwater, I'm told. The sea is running with fish from horizon to horizon when nobody's looking, practicing for paradise. All around me, sandpipers, plovers, and red-billed oyster catchers are scribbling good poems over and over in the sand, more than will ever be written by me. The Foundry. This one's called The Foundry. I worked in the Ford Motor Engine Foundry in Cleveland when I was going to college. One. After the rain Friday morning, the foundry smiles, and I'm stepping over puddles of oil in the parking lot. Smokestacks pelt the air with perfume. It can't get any better, because today I will be making automobile engines like yesterday and the day before for the good of mankind and for money. This isn't so bad. Who needs poetry? I get in line with the others at the gate where the night shift is coming out of the plant, the line bending like a thousand rainbows in the sun. As the sun hits the oil-slick ground, it is already 90 degrees and not worth hating. Two. Survivors of the war we didn't go to came back to the foundry in blue coveralls like everyone else, but they were different. We could tell their faces were thinner. At rest, their minds ran faster than a production line. They liked loud noise, because if the plant was quiet, they heard things, like the Viet Cong in tunnels, under conveyor belts and line machinery, under foremen and superintendents who stood around each morning talking, smoking cigarettes, not interested in anyone else. Three. On paydays, poker games in the cafeteria were violent. Piles of money can drive tough men crazy as lipstick. I was afraid. I just watched until it was safe to punch out. I didn't want to go home broke after 2 weeks and nothing to show for it. But some were lucky and now rich. Like in the movies where you can't trust your friends after robbing a bank, so they ran to their cars in the parking lot, like boys in suits running from a dancing lesson, dollars stuffed in lunch bags. The girls were all that was missing. Lunch hour. Doc Ellis threw a no-hitter on LSD, walked eight, struck out six. The Pirates won 2-0. I saw it on the news in the foundry cafeteria. Doc said later, halfway through the game, he was pitching to Jimi Hendrix with Richard Nixon calling balls and strikes. This was 1970. I had a sandwich in front of me and a busted lunch bag. I was wearing blue coveralls. There was a line of cars in the infield, their motors running. That's what the noise in the plant made it seem like. During the school year, I took LSD and put my hand through a wall trying to work a light switch. Like Doc, I didn't say anything the cops could remember, but I'm keeping a low profile. If the foreman comes around, it wasn't me pressing greasy fingerprints on the white bread my mother bought. Just two more and I'll wrap it up. This one's a short one called If I Could Write. If I could write like smoke rising from the Shenango coke plant on Neville Island in July, like burning particles of benzene and sulfur stinking as the moon comes up, if I could write the smell to end all smells, then burn my clothes to a nugget, so when the ovens emptied their fiery slag, my words would tumble out in the finished coal onto barges and towboats. The Ohio River would therefore be full of my poetry. With the wind blowing, you could read me for 20 miles. OK Corral. When my father was a boy in the 1920s, Wyatt Earp was still alive. riding back lots in Hollywood, a stuntman with a gun, looking for trouble. When cameras rolled, he was there in case a fight broke out, or when kids crowded Tom Mix. Once a lawman, always a lawman. He couldn't help himself. At the deli on Fairfax, old-timers said he sat with his back to the wall, just in case, or made people move. He didn't want to be caught like Bill Hickok holding a dead man's pastrami. Thanks, everybody.